In Russia, you were three.
No,
years?
No. First, in the first year at school, when I was in Poland, and then finished school in June. And of course, war was very imminent. I actually developed terrible whooping cough and was dreadfully ill. And we were in our holiday house in the country when war broke out. And we never went home. We just went east because my mother's sister was with her son, my cousin, out east where her mother-in-law had a big estate. I'm afraid these families all had big estates. Mm. My grandfather had several big estates, and my great-grandfather as well. It just happened to be, you know, that kind of family, so that my mother inherited from her parents, of course, with her siblings, two factories. So, you know, they were very comfortably off. And so we never went home from the holiday house. We went east variously by train to begin with, and then by horse and cart, and in various ways, and being bombed on the way by the German planes, you know, coming down. And finally we got to this estate where my aunt was.
So that was still part of Poland?
That was still, well, that used to be part of Poland, you see. We didn't realize that the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact had divided Poland across. So we actually had to cross the River Bug, which was the boundary now, at night in a rowing boat, really clandestinely, because we found ourselves in Soviet Russia suddenly. But it used to be Poland, yes. And so we got there. But of course, it was a big estate, and we stayed there about a week when the Russians came and said, right, you are landowners, out, out. And the peasants said, these people have always been good to us, let them pack up their things and take what they want. Because the Russians would have just, well, we were there only as visitors. But of course, my aunt's mother-in-law, she was the owner, and my uncle. Anyway, so we went to live in the town of Brody, which is now in the Ukraine. And so I went to school there, to the second class. But all the schools were moved down a year, because in Russia you went to school at 8 years old. So I was just 8 that January, so I found myself second time in first class. And we were taught Ukrainian. And then we had to register. The Soviet authorities wanted all these refugees that had come from Western Poland to register whether they would take Soviet citizenship or return to German-occupied Poland. At that time, of course, my parents corresponded with my grandfather and my mother with her brothers, and they said, well, things are not easy, but it's all right. This was still the winter 39-40. And here we were living in a little rented room in very difficult circumstances. So we registered. Well, there was no way we were taking a Soviet citizenship. That was just out of the question. So we registered to go back home. So in June of 1940, everybody who registered to return home to Poland was taken to a big cattle track train, and we were all transported to Siberia. Thousands and thousands of families, thousands. Big trains, cattle tracks packed full of people. It was quite an experience. I mean, we must have been on that train about, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks. I was 8 years old, I don't really know exactly. But I do remember one gentleman saying, as we were passing through a chain of mountains, that we are passing the Ural Mountains, and so now we are in Asia. And it seemed such a thing, being in Asia.
And were you standing during this?
Pardon?
Were you standing during this?
No, no, no. There were platforms. A cattle track. How can I explain it? You know, you've seen it on newsreels.
Of course.
But no, we weren't standing. There were platforms, two platforms on one side and two platforms on the other. But we were like one lying beside the other, absolutely packed. I don't know, maybe 50, 60 people in a cattle track. And once a day they would bring a sort of bucket with some soup and some bread, if you were lucky. It was just dreadful, dreadful. And the sanitary arrangements were horrendous. You know, if you were a child, it was not so bad.
Yes.
But for my mother, it must have been an absolute culture shock.
Of course. Absolutely horrific. And in Siberia, was there work for you? Was that
well,
why you were being sent?
We were taken by this train away to the sort of last station, I could show you on the map, last station in Siberia, in the middle of the, you know, what's known as taiga, a sort of primeval forest. And this was on the river Chulim, which is a tributary of the river Ob, which is the big, big river that goes to the north. And we disembarked there, and we had to, well, luckily it was June, so it was warm, because we had to wait for about a couple of days and nights to this little ship that went up and down the river, came, and we were taken down about 200 kilometers or so. And then when we got there, they had transport for the luggage, but we had to walk, I don't know, maybe 10 kilometers, something of that kind, to a, well, it really was like a camp for political prisoners. There were three such camps, sort of a distance of maybe 10 kilometers from each other. One was on the river and the others were a bit further in. And we just had to walk until we got there. And there were barracks and there were the watchtowers, but we were not the kind of people who were likely to run away. Where would we run to? There's primeval forest. There is a river. There's nowhere to run to. And we were put in these barracks, which unfortunately, of course, it's all logs, wood logs. Timber is the principal industry. And you have bed bugs in the timber. Even the trees that actually grow in the forest have bed bugs.
Oh,
so you can imagine.
That was the summer where you made the log, you put the logs together.
Ah, the men, well, when the people actually decided that another winter in Siberia would be just too much, they went to the river where the logs were, because logging was the industry, and they tied the logs together, making rafts, and then they tied the rafts together, and the rest of us who were still left in the camp all embarked on this. But it was October, so there was sleet and rain and cold, and we had no shelter, and our family personally, we really had no food. It was quite a horrible, horrible journey.
How long you were going?
Well, we were just floating down the river with the current till we got to the station Asino, which is, I can show it to you on the map. Now I'm trying to see the river Chulim I'm looking for. Now Tomsk, that's right. Now the river Chulim must be somewhere here. Kuznetsky. It's Asino, there you are,
there
Asino.
Is,
So Tomsk was like the nearest big town. That is Asino. And that's the river Chulim, yes.
And that was the river you went down?
That's the
Where river. Did you start from?
From, well, Asino. The train got as far as this.
Right.
And then we had to go down this river Chulim. My cousin in America, the one who was just a baby, he actually got this on his... you know, he's on the computer and he knows all about it. He's a professor of geology. And he actually got the whole thing, you know, was able to pinpoint the camp. And last, he got in correspondence with a professor in Tomsk and arranged to go there. And then he actually went to the camp where he had been as a child.
I just think it's absolutely incredible that he survived as, you know, as a, such a young age.
Well,
and he was on the raft as well.
Oh, yes. In fact, he remembers that someone tried to cook on the raft. And so they made a fire. And of course the logs took fire. And he remembers being passed from hand to hand away from this fire.
That's remarkable. And how long was your journey without food?
Well, we must have been a good few days. I mean, 200 kilometers sort of going with just floating down the river.
With no food?
Must have been about a week. Well, my mother managed to get some oats, but they were not like porridge oats that we have here for porridge. They were really oats that you feed to horses. Mm. And she made sort of with water, sort of cakes with it, and I personally could not swallow it. Mm. It was very rough.
Yes, it'd be very coarse.
Very rough.
But you must have also had to take water with you as well.
Fresh water?
I think
water
must have been the water from the river that was boiled. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is how there was a fire on the raft.
My goodness.
And we got to Asido. Now, they took us to Siberia. We didn't have to buy a ticket. Right. But when we were leaving Siberia, we got to Asino and had to get on a train, also cattle trucks, not a passenger train. We had to buy a ticket.
And you had no money.
And we had no money. And my mother still had her navy blue suit, and she took it into town on a sort of bazaar, and she sold it in order to have money to buy tickets. And we got on to this train, and we were going to the Asian republics because, of course, by this time, you know, the Germans were advancing into Russia, so we couldn't go into Russia proper. It had to be the Asian republics. And that was a very long journey, and again, we had really no food. It was quite a difficult journey. And we got to Kazakhstan. Thousands. Ah. I mean, Stalin transported hundreds of thousands of Poles to Siberia.
Right, and they ended up in...
And then we were allowed to leave, so people came to the train when we stopped. Alma-Ata, which is now called Almaty, but was used to be called Alma-Ata, which means father of apples, because the apples apparently in Kazakhstan are wonderful. And remember them saying, why don't we get off there, because it's very nice there. But we stayed on the train, and then it went through Tashkent, Samarkand, and Bukhara was the last stop. The train didn't go any further, so we got off. And of course the weather was wonderful, because end of October in Bukhara, it's just beautiful. The summer is very, very hot. Instead of being minus 50 like in Siberia, you can get up to plus 50, which is a bit too much. But it, you know, it was a lovely place with lots of trees and, you know, mulberry trees and all kinds of things.
And did they choose to go to the end of the line because it was the furthest away from the...
Well, we got off there, and each one of, you know, my mother's brother and my mother's sister, and we each rented a little room, a tiny little room. And then my father started looking for work, but he was so afraid of the communist Russians because he was the son of a big landowner. And if there was anybody they had their knife into, it was big landowners. They really didn't like them. Mm-hmm. And he was just scared. So he just went to work on a kolkhoz, you know, the like communal farm, as just a worker. So unfortunately, because he only came home for Sunday, which was his day off, You know, the sanitary conditions were very poor, to say the least. Water was very scarce, as in a hot country it always is. And lice were everywhere. I mean, even the people who have always lived there, the Uzbeks, because this is Uzbekistan, they all had lice. So you couldn't get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And typhus is carried by lice.
Mm-hmm.
And my father got typhus. He was taken to hospital. And then my mother got typhus. And the night she was taken to hospital, he died.
Oh, dear.
And I was 10 years old by this time. I was just 10 in January, and this was beginning of February. And my uncle came and packed up the bedding and the few things that we had. We had very, very little by this time. And took me to where he, with his wife and baby son, who by now it was 1942, so my cousin was just 4. His mother had also had typhus, but she had come back from hospital. She survived. Now, my father died, and nobody told me my father died. My mother was in hospital, and on a Sunday, when my uncle wasn't working, he would take me to go to hospital to see my mother, and I said, and I want to see my father. Oh no, you can't see him. He's there behind this window, but you can't see him. They never told me. I didn't find out my father was dead till my mother came out of hospital.
Really?
And of course she was so ill, they couldn't tell her until she got better.
And they probably thought they were being kind to you, but they weren't.
So I stayed with this aunt and uncle and baby son, and my aunt, my mother's brother's wife. I remember their wedding in Tarnów, which was a beautiful wedding. And I remember when my cousin was born. I was 6 when he was born. And she, of course, being after a severe illness, was mostly in bed, resting. And I was sent to the bazaar shopping before I went to school. I did the cooking, I did the cleaning.
You were only 10.
My cousin had to be washed, but you just had a basin. You put water in the basin and you stood the child in and you washed him. You know, at 10 years old, I was a maid of all work. Unfortunately, my aunt did not behave too well to me. Well, I was an orphan to all intents and purposes. My mother might not survive, so I'm totally dependent, totally. So finally I couldn't stand it anymore, and I told my uncle that the way she was behaving to me, I couldn't stand it, and I'd like to go to my other aunt, my mother's sister. So
your mother was still in hospital?
My mother was in hospital, and it was touch and go.
Right.
So I had to carry all the stuff across town because my aunt lived at the other end of town. But my aunt was okay. She treated me the way she treated her son, you know. If she was annoyed, she shouted, and otherwise she was okay. It was quite different to the way my uncle's wife treated me. And then finally my mother came out of hospital. Now she was a very small woman. The joke way back before my aunt and my mother were married was that the Miss Ecksteins can walk with an umbrella under a table because they were about 4'10". They were very small.
Very small.
And their mother obviously was small as well, judging by that photograph, you know. But she was quite a strong personality, very strong personality. And so my mother, when she came out of hospital, she looked like a child because she was so thin, there was absolutely nothing off her. And of course her hair had all been cut completely, very, very short. And she was just not worth tuppence. And she went to stay with her sister, where I was already. Not long after that, she took ill with dysentery.
Oh.
Now, on top of what she had been through, she nearly died.
Yeah,
Again. She was really dying, and this doctor came. He was a Jewish doctor from Poland. And she said to him, "My child has already lost her father. If I die, what will happen to her?" And he got me to go with him, and he gave me a little bottle of opium drops. And she took these opium drops, and that seemed to help her, because otherwise she was just going to die. So she managed to survive that.
Amazing.
She must have had an incredibly strong will. I mean, as you said, she lived...
104 and a half. This is a donation I gave to Wietzo in her name, in her memory.
She must have been a very strong person to.
Well,
to get
you see,
this.
She had such a privileged upbringing. As a, you know, it was a very wealthy family, very wealthy family. They, you know, when she was born in 1904. That part of Poland, Kraków, Tarnów, etc., that was called Galicia, and it belonged to the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So they traveled to Vienna like we would travel to London,
mm-hmm.
you know. My uncles were educated in Vienna. In fact, the First World War, the whole family spent in Vienna. They were brought up speaking German as well as Polish. They had a governess teaching them French. Only my grandmother, Matilda, when it was the cook's day off, she would make the girls come into the kitchen and make them cook and bake. And my mother's sister especially, she rebelled. "Why should I have to do this?" She said, "You never know when it may come in useful."
And she was right.
She was absolutely right, because the fact that my mother could cook is what saved us. Because then she got it, well, when she recovered from the typhus and the dysentery, the Polish sort of, by this time, there was a sort of Polish government in Moscow,
mm-hmm.
sort of government in exile. There was one in London,
mm-hmm.
and there was one in Moscow. And they sort of had so-called delegatura, which was a sort of people in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And people from abroad would send things for us poor people,
mm-hmm.
you know, clothes and shoes and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry to say that not everybody who was in charge was honest.
Mm.
So by this time, my mother had no shoes. Her feet were wrapped in rags. I ran around barefoot, and she was really in a very poor state. And they were looking for a cook for the nursery school that they opened for the small children, because in Russia you go to school at 8 years old. So between, say, 4 and 8, they opened a sort of nursery. So my mother got a job as a cook, because it was just a day nursery, but you gave them lunch, which consisted of soup. That's all she could cook, because there was nothing else. But she did the best she could with the products that they gave her. And the children all loved Mrs. Chantal's soup. And I was by this time in an orphanage.
Oh.
Which I hated.
Because your mother couldn't afford to look after you?
My mother couldn't feed me.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't feed me. She put me in an orphanage.
Oof. What? What?
And I hated the orphanage.
I'm sure you did.
I really did hate the orphanage. And my dream was that one day my mother would knock on the gate and come and say, "I'm taking you away from here."
Did she have time to visit you? Did she visit you in the orphanage?
Well, we were actually brought into Bukhara to attend school. The orphanage was out of town a bit, so we were brought into town to attend school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry to say I was very bad, because I would run away and go to this little nursery school where I knew my mother was cooking. And she would give me a plate of soup, and I would cry into the soup and say, I don't want to go back, I don't want to go back. But, you know, I had to go back.
Yeah,
I had to go back.
It must have been very hard for her as well. Awful.
Because I didn't hear what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. I was away. Whatever book I was reading, I was away.
It's quite amazing to think that somebody so small, you know, so tiny and fragile, could go through such awful experiences, terrible illnesses, life-threatening illnesses, and yet...
Well, I mean,
that she sort of decided, Bukhara, I'm going to live there, and that's what I'm going to do. And
in Bukhara, because of the heat, of course, we were plagued with mosquitoes. And my mother had malaria very badly. She used to get dreadful bouts of malaria. I only had one bout of malaria, and I tell you, it was pretty awful, because you are running such a high temperature that although there is tremendous heat outside, you know, like 35 degrees, 40 degrees, you are shaking with cold, and she piled quilts on top of me to, you know, but I was given quinine. A large, you know, sort of course of quinine, and that seemed to... I didn't get it again, but she kept getting recurring bouts of malaria. How she survived so long is a mystery. And why didn't I get typhus and dysentery and all these things that people got and died of? I mean, we lived in such close proximity. It wasn't like you could keep away from people. You couldn't.